to help yourself. And you already know the way. 3, every nerve and muscle in your body is beginning to respond. And you feel balanced. You feel good. You feel happy. I think it isn't just happiness. You feel joy. 4, your eyes are beginning to feel refreshed. They'll be a little bit red. This is one of the ways that you can judge that you have been in a trance. Let's not be afraid to use the term. You're not asleep, and yet you're so relaxed that even the iris of the eyes, you will have increased lacrimation. You will have tears. That's the eyes taking care of themselves. They will be so relaxed that they will be bloodshot, and you'll have just a second to have to focus on the next number, which will be 5. Your eyes will open. You'll feel good in every way. 5. Open your eyes. Take a deep breath. Stretch a little bit. Get comfortable. And feel good. Let's take a break. Thank you. Back to the here and now.
This is June the 12th, 1996, and we're gathered for a lesson on hypnosis with Hatton and Doris. We had one yesterday, and I think the tape did not get dated, but we're ready to go on the second session now. Greetings, Commander.
Good morning. Hatton and Light.
Good morning.
Kathy and Drowsy. This morning, I don't know if it's a bonus or a punishment for you. Maybe we should discuss what we have going here. If you want some classes in elementary hypnosis and self-therapy, we can do that.
Yes.
Who said yes?
Margie.
I thought it was Margie. What she wants to do, she can't do anymore. She's out of time. She can't do anymore. Now she wants to get herself some more classes going so that she can work twice as long and not realize it.
That's right.
It's the way some people do their party dishes. If you have enough to drink, you might as well do the dishes that night because you won't remember it the next morning. And you'll be so pleased when you come out and your head hurts that you did them. Everybody wants to categorize everything. You don't like it if a master teacher would come down and teach you anything but exactly what God does every second of his existence. You know, wave his hands and make magic and miracles. Specifically, you would hope for you. Well, God doesn't work that way. God gives you a brain of which you use a very tiny percent. I would think that an average of 10% indicates that most use it far less than that. Well, I'm not here to complain about the use of your brain. I am here to discuss the use of your mind. Dharma would rather be anywhere else than doing this. And I put her through a little shocker this morning because she had just spent some time with Gil, and there have been years since then, since 1984, that she and EJ's sister first experienced Gil Boyne. Now, I will tell you how difficult it is for us to work. You do have a unique opportunity here to see the inner and inner, I-N-N-E-R, workings of guides, teachers, and yourself. If I were a visible energy here, they would put her in jail. That's how close you come. And how careful I have to be about what we do. And she's not interested in teaching a class in anything. And she finds it uncomfortable. And my feeling is, well, then why did you do what you did? Why did you go and why did you learn? Why did you need to experience that? And now she knows me better. She said, because you undoubtedly sent me there. I don't know why I did it. And I understand it less now why I did it. So this morning, just before coming over here, she decided to listen to one of Gil's training tapes because he'd done this series and it was there and they got it. And so she put it on. And he's going through whatever Gil's going through. She gets into the shower, steps out of the shower to herself, speaking. And it's interesting to note that she was speaking because she'd just been laying across Gil's lap in front of the room for probably 20 minutes. Something she would never have done. And I would remind her that she also said she would never sit on the front row again, only to always push to the front row. God works in mysterious ways. There was a reason for doing it. If you think it wasn't interesting to have watched that first interchange, she had kids in college, and of course the Glendale Community College bulletin always came and it always got tossed out once the kids were not around. Or there's always that intrigue about looking through to see if you should study Spanish this year, or maybe I better check in on a computer class, or you're always going to improve yourself, see. And Gil had an ad. And it was like becoming addicted instantly. Just turning the pages, I said right off the page, you have to do this. Argument. Why in the world would I do that? I'm no longer even at the hospital. Oh, but you need to do this. Oh, but I don't really want to do this because, after all, I'm not working anymore with the children, and that probably would have been really good to know. Why should I waste a month or so of my time doing this? Indeed, why? But it didn't go away. And this was on a Friday. And EJ said, well, I don't know what your driving need to do this is, but if so, I have to tell you, because she's not going to go down to something like that by herself. And let's suck somebody else in, you know. If I can get somebody else to go with me, then I suppose we can raise the money, but I don't know what good it would do now. But I have to do it. EJ, I just have to do it. And he said, well, I can't. They had an energy business, and he said, I just can't do it right now. If you want to go, then you'll just have to go. Well, I have to go, and I just think that then we better get Tissy from Salt Lake. She needs this, because Evelyn teaches one of the most unique programs in the United States. It's a class for unwed mothers. In Utah, they take the children who are pregnant, and some of them are as young as 11 years old that she's worked with. They are pregnant, have decided to keep their child, and are beginning to show, and they need some mothering, and they need to learn to become a little bit mother. They need some counseling. Obviously, they're not getting exactly what they need at home, or they wouldn't be in this position anyway. But don't count on that, because a lot of things are happening in your societies that no longer stands true. But Evelyn works with these unwed mothers in the school system. And that was her last day of school. And she would have like the weekend, and then she was starting a course, and she was going to be a counselor at Brigham Young University, which was in Provo, which was south of Salt Lake. So she had her hands full. And this was what she usually did to acquire credits when her school session would be out. So onto the phone. Evelyn, you have to do this. You have to get down here. And we have to sign up. And she said, well, when is it? When can I work it in? I said, well, it's Monday. And she said, who's minding your business? And Doris says, well, nobody, but I just know that I have to do this, and if I have to do this, you have to do this. And is it something you can't get out of? Well, I can't afford it, and I can't do it, and I can't. I mean, it would turn the world upside down, and they decided to turn the world upside down and do something so crazy. And I think the bonding between these two people who really were at cross odds, there had been some real family problems. And I think that that did it. These two sisters became such close friends out of this experience. And the sharing of what she knew she would have to do when she got back and tried to use this. Well, these are the reasons that you need professional classes. If we're going to do what I would consider even a basic minimum teaching class, we need to handle it one way. If we just want to play with it a little bit, we can handle it another way. If we want to do it regularly, we need to do it another way. And then some people have problems that are great enough, they don't show on the surface, and there's no reason that they wouldn't share it with you. But they have to decide whether or not they want to confront such a massively private circumstance when they find why they do some of the things they do. You see, simple stuttering is a good one to play with. Hypnotherapy is exactly what it sounds like. And why would anyone get therapy? Because something is amiss. Something's wrong. You don't need therapy if you have a headache and can take an aspirin. So why would you bore your angels or yourself with trying to heal something that's not sick? But a man who stutters for 40 years and cannot even order at a restaurant or pick up a phone, and it is worsening, this is destroying his life. And that requires some confrontation at a level where the problem started. You will find most of the teachers who are valid and caring and can accredit you will not even begin to think about advertising regression therapy to go and look in a past world. They just let that lay. But anyone in the practice of therapy will always find that a client, if you will, you're not sick, so it's not a patient. And besides, you don't want to encroach on the medical profession or they'll get you. So there are some things that if you're going to use this, you're going to have to learn what the rules are and what to say and what not to say, because you ain't going to cure anything. But I'll tell you, something miraculous happens, and you go in and the patient will cure itself. You're just a tool, because most people cannot handle the entire procedure for themselves. So we can play with this for a while, and I don't mind doing that, because Norma needs the realization that she is as good as I've told her she is. But she doesn't want to butt into anybody's life. Her life is so full now that she doesn't really want to take on, quote, a practice. And I would not want to even suggest that anyone take on this as a practice other than an entertainment, or maybe to help someone stop smoking, unless you know what you're doing. Now, Rick is a psychologist. He studied psychology. And he will have to brainwash that out of his head to be able to deal with this. But he already has faced those consequences. But There are some basic things in psychology that are true. Ones will say, well, I don't need this education because they just uneducate me. That's a political part. It is like talking about Freud. It is accepted now that Freud was crazier than anybody he could possibly have treated. So they found that Freudism was an error in perception. And I will say this, that most of your Khazarian psychiatrists, well, it's been said, so I can say it again. A psychiatrist is a half-crazy nitwit treating a half-sane one. And usually they don't treat you at all. They take your money, and that's sometimes enough. You feel you've done something if you're thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars into something. You should watch what's the guy that did Ten? The girl Ten?
Bo Derek.
What is the boy?
John Derek.
No.
Dudley Moore.
Keep coming down.
Dudley Moore.
Well, he did a motion picture, and I don't remember what it is called, but he... He's a psychiatrist, and he is a Khazarian psychiatrist. And if you want to see into the world of psychiatry, watch it. It's both a good comedy, and it's what happens. And they're going to drum him out of the Corps because he fired one of his patients. And this patient said, oh, but doctor, what did I do wrong? And he says, I just can't help you. But I paid you. You see, these were the crutches you can present. So we move from Freudianism, the Freudian approach, where everything works around sex. Well, they wanted to make everything work around sex, didn't they? So that you would misuse, have insane expectations, and allow you to move into the plague of AIDS. Everything is okay. Let's put Dr. Ruth on the screen, where everything is not only okay, but necessary. Anybody looking at little 3-foot misfit and then basing their whole sexual experience on that kind of garbage is truly sick and needs a psychiatrist to let them know how sick they are. But they will not tell them they're sick over that. Now, why, if you have migraine headaches, would you need to go to a psychiatrist, for goodness sakes? Because medicine doesn't know what to do about migraine headaches. It's one of those incurables, unknowns. Well, how long have they been around? Since the birth of man. It is a response to something. And until you know what it is in response to, you can't possibly just toss it off. So anyone with any responsibility in their brains or their soul will want to know what they're doing before they go out and hang a shingle up and say, I'm a therapist. All you have to do to realize how inept you are is simply to get into one of those pickles. That doesn't mean that Sandy or someone can't have a person walk through their door and they need to become relaxed, and the best method is through hypnosis. So play tape. Take the time, if you don't know what you're doing and you don't feel comfortable with it, take the time. It only takes a moment. Hypnosis, no. You can't walk up to somebody and say sleep and they're going to sleep. You cannot do it. They're smarter than that. So ones might say, well, what do you do then? What did you do to Kathy? What did you do to John? Well, I know the key. There are several things you need to know about hypnosis. You have to know what is the induction. There's no great big confounded secret about going into a trance. You do it every day. A child almost lives in one. A child can only experience what is going on. And you'll see them a dozen times a day, especially a little child, absolutely lost. Wide awake, not even blinking, staring. The little subconscious mind, who knows where its consciousness is? You will do the same thing if you're thinking on a problem. If you come down to this office every day, and this is true of commuters who have long commutes, this is usually what will happen. They will have some music on or they'll have some radio on to keep their minds, you know, with it. And they want the weather and they want to know if there's an accident on the freeway that's going to hold them up. So it'll usually be on. And then the next thing they realize is they missed the announcement. Usually the mind will engage just as it goes off. And if you ask them at that moment, well, what were you thinking about? Well, they'd probably tell you, well, I don't know. Or if there is a problem they were thinking about and they were off rehearsing, then they will tell you. Or you will be driving along and you know that within 5 miles or 10 miles, there will be a sign that tells you what the road conditions are ahead. Well, I'll check that. And suddenly, after you've passed it, you wake up. Well, for goodness sakes, I missed that too. Then you'll get to the office, and you'll realize that you were not conscious of anything that you did all the way to the office, except those little breaks. It becomes a habit. You will say, oh, my car goes on automatic pilot, and I get there. And unless there is something that pulls you out of that, it doesn't mean that you're not alert. It doesn't mean that you are asleep. It means that you're in trance. You are in hypnosis. You don't go under anything. That is a misstatement. And so is unconscious. You are never in your physical world unconscious. When you talk about hypnosis, it is simply a changing of the focus of attention. It is a setting aside in total relaxation of the critical mind. You know that one up there that says, you're going to look so silly up there. Don't go up there. You're going to look so stupid. And then you get up there, and sure enough, you cannot speak because you're terrified. It's that critical mind that will make you feel guilty if you didn't do something. If you did not create or do something, and it's up for grabs as to who might have done it, I'll take it. I must have done it. This is a guilt trip. And if you think the Khazarians aren't good at this, man, and this is something so typical of humanity that it is astounding. And the more they can play to the guilt, the more they can play to the shame. Oh, you thought that, so aren't you ashamed of yourself? Well, you get rid of all of that shame. The best one to talk about it is somebody who has experienced it. And I feel it's absolutely mandatory that ones who experience, especially for the first time, discuss it. But I wasn't going to discuss this with Kathy yesterday. This was a very personal thing for Kathy. She's going through a hard time right now with children raising. And always a mother, no matter what I'm told. No, I can deal with this. No, no matter what I'm told, the mother thinks if I just did something different, if I gave up whatever I'm doing. Do you really think that Robbie wants to spend 100% of his time with his mommy? No, he sure doesn't. So that's not an answer. So we go for the answer. We don't go for the guilt. We don't go for his guilt. Robbie's father died. And he died a dreadful death. And Robbie cannot help it if he blames himself a little bit for the feelings he had of betrayal and desertion by his father. So he's going to go, and he's going to be one of the boys. And Mommy has to understand that. That doesn't make what's happening easier, and it doesn't mean that he can be allowed to not face responsibility. It's the facing of responsibility when something happens that makes life valuable and allows for growth. And usually when something happens, it is both parties calling out for help. What will you do? If I do this, what will you do to me? Will you still love me? You see, a little babe gets smart right fast. I'm going to throw this fit. I'm going to embarrass them. I am going to do the worst thing that I can do, and then I'll see if they still love me. And if they do, I'm going to do something worse. Because absolutely it will not be proven to me if they beat me to death that they love me. And they think that I'm too young to reason with. So the reaction comes with what do we do? Well, we confront whatever is before us. We take it with responsible response. There are consequences for actions that may not be avoided. This is why I am appalled at a justice system that comes to nothing but a plea bargain. Pay your money and get out of here. You just murdered somebody, but you just plead reckless behavior. You get less, pay your fine, get out. Until a system disciplines for the damage created, the consequences, in other words, are faced appropriately, the mind will do it. The mind will do it. But if you have trained the minds to accept a lesser penalty, a plea bargain, and there is no consequence for your behavior that suits the crime, the mind will invent its own. And then finally it will move right on until there is no conscience. And when there is no conscience, watch out. And that's what you have bred a society to be, a non-conscienced society. Didn't you know that lying was wrong? Well, yes. Then why did you lie? Well, I certainly didn't want to get caught. And then lying becomes the acceptable. Any of you who watched Bugliosi and Dershowitz battling it out last night on Larry King will appreciate what I'm talking about. Even these lawyers get to the point where they stand there and call each other total liars. You are lying. And they are. But they just took the cold nidri this morning. That's what they're taught to do. And you see what now, Bugliosi even, this great prosecutor, who absolutely knows that Simpson's guilty, will say it was a fluke. Van Adder and Mr. Lang were totally, totally filled with integrity. They knew Mr. Simpson did it. They are only guilty of one thing. They planted some evidence and they did this and they lied about that and they did these other things because they were afraid the system would let him go.
More legal logic.
It's insane. So then, what do with the mind? You turn it over to a bunch of psychiatrists who have moved to the Pavlovian theory. Well, that's pretty good, because for every action, there is an equal reaction. To every thought, there is a response. And if you think anything and believe it, for instance, I can get everyone in this room to sweating, pouring, by getting you into a trance and convincing you it's hot in here. And you will respond. And the one who doesn't respond is the one out of step. And I mean it. That one will say, no, I'm in total control of myself. No, you're not. Because this is a harmless little game, you see. And if you are so afraid to join the game, then you have a bigger problem. You have no control over yourself, and you fear the loss. And you will say, I can't be hypnotized. I love those kind. I love those kind. Because those are the kind that have already hypnotized themselves, and they're standing there in a trance telling me I can't do anything to them. But we do have some things that will help us. And it doesn't have anything to do with your actions in a deep trance, but it does mean that we are finally getting around to an opportunity to recognize that each of us as searchers, especially the older we get as searchers, the more times we have failed for the same reason in the past, sometimes it helps to go back and look. And sometimes you can find it yourself if you have the right tools. Unfortunately, you cannot control totally that turn-off mechanism, or I like to call it the shifter. How do you get the conscious, critical mind to turn off long enough to investigate these things? Well, you can take the tape that Dorma and I made in the weight loss thing. You don't have to use it for that. Go back in these segments. Your mind is brilliant. It is perfect. It is 100%. Unless you have brain damage. Unless actual cells in the brain are damaged, you have a perfect mind. And it doesn't mean you don't have a perfect mind then. It is just that you can't use it. You've lost your bridge. That's all that has happened to Christopher Reeve. He's lost his bridge, his conduit. Just like breaking a gas main. You cannot light a fire in this stove if you can't get the gas from over here to over here to your stove. That is called brain damage. And there are some things that may be able to repair the brain cells enough to be able to eventually re-bridge that gap. But most times, that it depends on the severity. But you see, a coma, someone lying in a coma that is not directly due to a severing of the nervous system, or a massive need to remove parts of the brain, or such brain damage in areas that cannot be bridged. A coma, there's nothing wrong with the mind. It does not want to be back in the body for some reason. It's either lost. And don't you ever, ever think that a body lying there in a coma is any different than a body lying under anesthesia in a hospital operating room. And if that body hears the doctor say, I do not believe this person will ever come out of this coma, and if they do, they will not be able to speak again. They will not be able to communicate. They won't. Why come back to the body if I've already had that sentence passed on me? I will never be anything other than a vegetable in this bed. I may as well be a vegetable up here where I can live in my astral form. I don't know that person down there anymore. And they have just pronounced that that person down there is going to keep me in prison. And if you do not have a signed contract with your physician before you go into surgery, you make a big error. And on that contract you say, you will not say anything negative to my recovery. You will not give a time for my recovery. Just ignore it. You will not allow any doctor to discuss your case in a negative manner in your presence while you are asleep. Because that, of all times, is when your mind is the most open and susceptible for input. You know, a doctor might have you wide open and say, well, you know, we're getting all these cells, but I don't believe it's going to help an iota. I think this poor lady, man, and if and when we get her, him, back on his feet, he will never walk. He will never function. Oh, look, we've gotten this clot out of his vessel, but I don't think he's just not ever going to talk again. He's never going to be able to use his left side again. One person with massive muscle response to a very emotional situation. You know, the answer of the medical profession is there is nothing else to do. We've done everything we can. The only thing left is cut the nerves. Never occurs to them to test it. Let us say you have someone whose home burns. Let's talk about a case that actually happened. A man who took care of his mother, who was wheelchair-born, and she lived with him. He was her caretaker. And he had gone from the home for a little while. He had fixed her comfortably and had left her there. She was not able to get herself around. Well, the house caught fire. The mother was slain. He fell into a deep depression, as would be logical. He came back. He was speaking, and he was in total agony. And then suddenly he quit speaking. He could not speak. Could not speak. So then started a series of incredible medical expense and misery. And they go to every psychiatrist, every nut there is. Now we move along and hook him up with one of your medical miracles in action. The same one, I might add, who studied Bianchi and pronounced various and sundry things about him. This man, this wonderful man, begins to work with, we'll call him Joe. Joe cannot speak. Joe has not uttered a word to his wife, to anyone else, in years. But in hypnosis, he babbled like a broken record. And in searching, what happened here? Well, he was able to fish out of this subconscious mind that this man had felt such a responsibility for the death of his mother that for 20 years he was not going to speak. That was his penalty. He had made up his penalty, or actually it was not for that long. It was like for 12. Already 8 years had gone. So this goes on for several other years. This doctor meeting these people, using their money. Now what does this idiot do? He brings the man's wife into the session. And you should see her face when Joe speaks. And she asks a very logical question. Well, if he can talk in here, why can't he talk to me? And what does idiot do? He says, I will guarantee you that by the end of 3 years, we will have him back talking to you. Now, don't you think that at the end of 3 years, he was going to be talking anyway because he would have served his own sentence? But this man now had 3 more years to bash this person and take their money and become a great writer of how hypnosis works. What a wonderful thing he did. He cured this man. Well, even the wife was smarter than that. But this is what your psychiatrists do. I don't know why this person can't speak. We'll have to do throat surgery, and we'll do an MRI and a QVP and a PAT and a CAT and a... I mean, we are going to do everything. We will leave no expensive test undone to find why this is working this way. When a hypnotist can walk in there and in 5 minutes tell you whether or not you're working with a psychopath.